Good morning. It is 11 a.m. on Friday, July 26th, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and this is Kingston Currents. CFRC's news programming is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. In today's episode, we'll be covering the launch of the anti-racist Kingston campaign last Friday, the latest updates on the LaSalle Causeway, the Skelton Park Arts Fest Volunteer Appreciation Concert last night, and more. In response to an increasing number of racist incidents in the Kingston area, the Anti-Racism Kingston Task Force has launched a new campaign to raise awareness and provide support to the community. The Anti-Racism Working Group, made up of volunteers from Kingston's BIPOC communities, was established in 2021 to address increasing reports of racist incidents in the Kingston area. In addition to this, the Anti-Racism Task Force was founded by current co-chairs Abba Mortley and Bhavana Varma to focus on large employers in the region, including municipal, government, healthcare, educational, and business leaders. The Anti-Racist Kingston campaign officially launched on Friday, July 19th. The campaign aims to raise awareness about the racism faced by many community members daily and provides tools and resources to call out and report racism. The campaign was created based on experiences collected in a community survey, which received over 100 responses from Kingston residents. The survey found that 40.7% of respondents had personally experienced a racist incident, and 19.8% had witnessed an incident. I sat down with anti-racism co-chairs Abba Mortley and Bhavana Varma to talk about this campaign. To get us started, both of you were at the forefront of establishing the Anti-Racism Task Force originally. I was wondering if you could give us some background on that and the lead up to launching this campaign.
Yeah, certainly. Pavna and I, in 2020, realized that there had been an increase in the amount of racist acts and incidents that I've been having in Kingston. We had a list that we had been compiling, and it became really concerning. And so we actually went to council to say, you know, these are things that are happening in Kingston, and if we are trying to be a community that is welcoming and that it's growing and welcoming diverse populations and people, then we really have to step up to the plate and back that up with actions and have a city that is also being accountable internally and externally and listening to these incidents that are happening. And so with that, they mandated two groups to be formed. One was kind of an internal review of all the things that they were doing, and then the second one was to form anti-racism working group. They thought that something that was community-led, that would be from the ground up, would give information as to what people were experiencing in Kingston. And as a result of that, they thought that from those actions, they'd be able to get steps to try to make a difference. And so that's what kind of started the group. That kind of stalled for a couple of years. Like, we didn't really hear much about what was happening with that group. So we went back to say, hey, remember we asked you a couple of years ago to do this? What's going on? And so then again, we formed another committee to finish off that working group. But we also realized that there needed to be a connecting piece. You can't always have the people who incidents are happening to at the same table with the organizations that are kind of perpetrating, for lack of a better word, these types of incidents. And so we realized we needed a bridging factor to make sure that there would be accountability and there also would be action. And so that's why we, Pat and I, went to the mayor and asked if, you know, he would consider helping us to make this task force that would allow us to do that bridging action.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for the background. And Vanna, did you have anything to add about the sort of beginning phases of this project?
No, I think it's great because one of the things we recognize, and as Abba has said it so well, people who are experiencing, like, the working group is made up of BIPOC, so Black, Indigenous people of color. And it's a lot to expect. It's hard work to start with. It's a lot to expect them to then try to influence policy. So if we had community leaders around the table, it's that much easier for us to bring issues to them to say, this is what's happening, you know, and have them work together to kind of address some of those issues.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, today you're launching this campaign, which consists of many different pieces. I was wondering if you could dive right into what Kingstonians will be seeing starting today.
So last year at the Intercultural Festival and online, we recruited Ryan and Jen from BMDota Strategic Design to help us with this professional awareness campaign. And they have they conducted a survey, and ABBA and I were there as well, so we heard a lot of the feedback. And that survey, they've used some of those words that people hear all the time. People who are racialized hear these all the time, and they've captured them in an amazing campaign. So you see pictures of people, and then you have the words that they constantly hear. And also there are some videos where you have a young person and you get some comments and some labels, but then as they get older, you see more and more, they come fast and furious. It's a very effective campaign. Mm-hmm. ABBA, do you want to add anything to that?
No, it's great. And, the campaign shows a viewpoint from different lenses. So there are different people from different backgrounds, the different ages. And so it really kind of captures the essence of what we're trying to do. And it also, as Padma says, captures the urgency of what happens as one ages. You know, you move from somebody who may be cute and kind of get like some of this layers, but not a lot of it. And then as you age, you kind of see a progression of like a little more aggression and kind of the words and the amounts and the volume. And so that's really, really captured wonderfully by Brian and Jen and BMDota Designs in it.
So. Yeah, absolutely. So you'll have this awareness campaign, and you're also providing tools and support for the community to combat racism on, you know, a more active level. I was wondering if you could get into what this will consist of.
Yeah, certainly. So, I mean, one thing is awareness. You know, people can say that they don't know that it's happening, and so now you can't, because it will be in front of your faces and wraparound buses and on signs and on different platforms. But the other thing we found is even somebody who's experiencing racism, sometimes you don't even know what to do. And what we found with all these organizations is that many of them had reporting tools, but they were silos to themselves. So, for example, the universities might have one, the police may have one, the Limestone School Board may have one. And there were two reoccurring themes. One was that either people didn't know it was there, or the confidence and the trust in that wasn't there, so they didn't report it because they felt like there was no action that was going to come from it. And so the idea behind this is to compile all of these different tools that people have so that people can see after the fact where they may go, and even if it's just a place to like relate what happened to them, so then that incident is at least recorded so we are aware of the data. And then secondly, if something, you know, can be done, how do you go about doing that, and who are the people and what are the tools? And then thirdly, I guess I'll add one more, is if you're a bystander and you happen to be there, sometimes in the midst of things you don't know what to do, and so it's giving you some tools and resources to say, oh yeah, I remember I saw this campaign and they said that maybe I should just ask the person if they're okay, or maybe I can go back and do a bystander report, and that is also effective after the fact. So just giving different groups of people different opportunities and tools to do different things with.
Absolutely, yeah. And Bhavana, did you have anything to add to that about these new tools that are going to be introduced?
It's a living document. So ABBA's described it really well, but the City of Kingston does have resources right now. And so our antiracistkingston.ca website will keep adding tools as we hear about more reporting tools, as we hear about different techniques and tools that can help people. When someone's going through a racist experience, I can speak from personal experience, your brain kind of freezes. And what's really effective is if someone else is out there either to support you in that moment or to address the person who is the perpetrator and maybe help them understand that what they said or did was not comfortable.
Absolutely. And you got into this in both of your answers here, but I was wondering if you could just speak a bit to what you're hoping to see come from this and your vision for how this can impact Kingstonians.
So maybe it's naive, but we believe that, there are a number of racist incidents, but we believe that a lot of them are being conducted by a minority of people. And so what we're hoping is that the majority that will not tolerate racism will stand up and make sure that people know that racism is not acceptable in Kingston and area.
Yeah, and I think yes, that's true. Amplifying the voices of allies and letting them know that it is important. It's just as important, even more important, to be there to support, and that other people, because I think if it's not happening to you, it's not that you don't realize that it's there, it's just that it's not in your circle, so you don't think about it. So maybe just an awareness, so that, you know, I think of my kids, and if something were to happen with them, I would want their friends to be like, no, that's not right, and stand up, and why are you doing that with them and not us? And so I think really for me, it's a matter of like teaching younger generations to also get a pattern, so that they know and they become, you know, even more better allies and citizens of the community of the world. And so that's my hope, is that they'll be like, yeah, this shouldn't happen and this isn't even an issue, so that we don't have to have this continued conversation for when they're my age and their kids are my age. So that's my hope.
Just to add to what Abba's saying, much as it's less when you're young, we have reports of racist incidents with five-year-olds in our community. So at the age, you know, it's from 5 years old, right, or even younger, right up to when you're older. Professionals, seniors, students, it's all across the board. We have in Kingston a really high increase in the number of racist crimes. And racist incidents, a lot of them don't go reported. So those are the ones that we've kind of compiled, because they're not crimes, but they are still incidents. And so we do see a dramatic increase. And we know that women tend to face more overt racism. That's also from experience we've learned. Men definitely face it, but it's a little more covered in some instances, in some environments.
And lastly, sorry, particularly students too. You know, we have a lot of students between all our campuses at St. Lawrence as well as at Queen's University. And there's a lot of rhetoric about, you know, their language, their food, that is just kind of said in a laissez-faire way, but has a hurtful impact to those people. And so just making sure that, you know, you're coming to our city, you're coming to our schools, that getting that buy-in from all these different organizations, so that it's not acceptable, that language is not acceptable, that attitude is not acceptable. We are a welcoming space because we want to grow, and just having all those tools there, so that also as the person coming, you know that it's, you know, there are tools to report it and you can feel comfortable in doing so with numbers, you know, their strength. So hopefully that'll help.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And I was wondering if you could speak also a little bit more to that increase. Is it the last decade? Is it the last 5 years? What are we kind of looking at there?
I could speak briefly to it, and maybe Pamela could fill in some of the gaps because she'd have more data on that. But I would say just even our students, like we have been getting more students internationally. That's, you know, the fees, let's be real, with international students are three times that of a domestic student. And so there has been a push in all universities to maximize that. And so I think that along with new immigrants moving for opportunities to Canada has compounded that increase in persons who are living here from different diverse populations. And so those two things over, I think, the last 5 years or so have really kind of added to that that number, more so than it had been in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the last 5 years during the pandemic, it almost felt like, so most of us racialized people have experienced racism consistently. Everyone has experiences that they can talk about. But we saw an increase in the number and the frequency, and also the directness of, it's almost like a filter was lifted during the pandemic and people started to say things that they might have been thinking all along and just never felt they could say it. It just seemed like it was a sharp increase. We also started to see some escalation, like water bottles thrown at a young boy and a man and someone who's running on the trail. There are instances of the N-word painted on someone's garage. So it started to escalate a little more, which is why Abba and I felt that we needed to do something drastic about it. And it's not uncommon, as Abba says, we're starting to see an increase in diversity. And as a result, people who are uncomfortable with that are starting to react. And it's I speak to my colleagues across the country when I was with the United Way, and I continue to stay in touch with them. And a lot of the mid-sized communities like ours, who are now starting to see this increase that's already happened in larger cities, we're now starting to experience that pushback from some people who are just not comfortable with the change in demographics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for speaking to that a bit. How are you feeling about being able to officially launch this campaign today after putting so much work into it?
Excited and nervous. One of the things that someone pointed out was that we probably will get some social media backlash, and so that does make us nervous. But, you know, this is not a comfortable conversation, and I think just having those will reinforce the need for continuing to push this campaign. I know I'm going to miss Abba so much, dramatically, because she and I have been working on this really closely, and it's not been an easy ride all the way. It's been fun, but it's not been easy all the time. And so certainly excited that it's here, nervous, and really missing Abba.
I'm here, just so wait, but I'm pretty excited. I'm really bummed that I can be there. Like, we even looked at driving to Los Angeles to see if I could get a flight back, but it still wouldn't get me back in time. So really sad not to be there today, but really excited. You know, Pavel and I are both action people. Like, we go in and we're like, we just want to get things done. And so I think it's just really nice to see something come to fruition. And now I'm already like, what are the next steps? How are we going to like use this information so that we can have, you know, we already have different ideas as to how we can keep people accountable. Because I think the other part for me is that it's all great to be aware and it's all great to have tools, but now, like, what do we do with that information to build a safety net? I think we have to build that trust in community, and I think that it will take a long time. But I'm really excited that we have the first step. The campaign is phenomenal, and I think, like, it's really heartwarming, I guess, as just one individual in a community to see that, you know, we can, as a collective, work together to get something like this done, and that all the partners seem to have buy into it, and that's really good, you know? And so hopeful that now we could continue to, you know, impart these changes, have little capillaries flowing everywhere so that eventually that we don't have to reach the point where we're doing that. So I guess I'm really excited about the potential and the fact that it's coming to fruition. And when I walk down the street, I'll see a bus wrapped around with some messaging. So that will spark a lot of discussion, I'm sure. And just like Pavel, tentative, because, you know, there's whenever something happens, there's always positive, there's always pushback, and so I guess just waiting to see what that looks like. Hopefully we will rally through it, but just kind of aware that there might be some negativity as well, and so just being prepared for that in whatever form that comes up in.
Once again, that was Abba Mortley and Bhavana Varma, co-chairs of Anti-Racism Kingston, speaking about the launch of the Anti-Racist Kingston campaign. Kingstonians can expect to see different elements of the campaign around the city, including on Kingston Transit buses, posters throughout the city, and on social media. To learn more and access other resources and reporting tools being offered, you can visit antiracistkingston.ca. After months of uncertainty, recent updates from PSPC and the City of Kingston have provided a clearer view of the LaSalle Causeway temporary solution and permanent reconstruction. Kingstonians have been working around the major closure since March 30th, when an incident during construction irreparably damaged the Bascule Bridge. PSPC and the City have been providing regular updates and have been working with Presley Demolition Incorporated to determine their next moves. On Friday, July 19th, PSPC announced that they will be constructing a temporary modular bridge, set to open at the end of September 2024. This will reopen the path across the Cataraqui River to vehicular traffic, and will also include space for pedestrians and cyclists to cross the bridge on one side. As for marine traffic, the Marine Navigation Channel will remain open until the installation of the temporary bridge. But once installed, PSPC anticipates that they will have to remove and reinstall the bridge a couple of times before the end of the navigation season in order to create temporary access. During these temporary marine access windows, vehicular, cyclist, and pedestrian access will be unavailable. The specific timing of these windows is to be determined. PSPC also stated there has not been a decision made regarding the frequency of marine access windows for 2025 and onwards. The temporary modular bridge will remain in place until the construction of a permanent replacement bridge is complete. According to a release from the city in response to the extended closure, full reconstruction is expected to occur in 2025, but a specific timeline has not been provided. In the same release, the city also listed the work they've been doing to handle the closure, including adjusting traffic signals to respond to traffic congestion, adding transit service to manage delays and help keep detoured routes on time, expediting construction projects that can improve traffic flow, and services like a free pedestrian water taxi running from downtown Kingston to the East End. The city has also launched a new webpage, available at cityofkingston.ca, which includes the latest project updates, alternative travel options, and the city's current initiatives. Before we get into more local news, I'm going to turn to our weather and traffic report for today. For your weather report today, we're expecting sunny skies with winds being 20 kilometers per hour late in the afternoon. We have a high of 26 degrees with humidex that's going to feel like 31. We have a UV index of 8 or very high. Tonight, we're expecting clear skies with a low of 15. Looking forward to tomorrow, Saturday, July 27th, we're expecting sunny skies with a high of 27 degrees. Saturday night, clear skies with a low of 17. Finally, on Sunday, July 28th, we're expecting sunny skies with a high of 29 degrees, and Sunday night, we're finishing off the weekend with clear skies and a low of 19. For your traffic report this morning, to start us off, PSBC is advising users that the LaSalle Causeway is still fully closed to motorists, cyclists, and pedestrians until further notice. In road closures to look out for, Albert Street, Princess to 486 Albert, closed until December 31st for construction activity. Hillcrest Avenue, Kings Court to 7th, closed until September 1st for buried infrastructure replacement. The road will be open to local traffic. King Street, Plastarms to North End of King, closed until September 30th for the construction of new storm and roadbed. The road will be open to local traffic. Market Street, King to Ontario, closed today until 12 a.m. for Rockin' in the Square. Sydenham Street, Princess to Queen, closed until September 27th for downtown Kingston BIA activations. University Avenue, Union to Earl, closed until July 31st for the Queen's JDUC project. In parking disruptions, the Hanson Memorial Parking Restoration Project is underway. Work is planned to conclude in late December of 2024. The work will be completed in phases to allow the building to remain open to public parking for the duration of the project. No more than 50% of the available 271 parking spaces will be closed at any time. There is also parking availability at the Chan Memorial and Roper Bruce Memorial parking garages in the two adjacent blocks to the west. In other delays, Aberdeen Street, Johnson to Earl, expect delays and closures along Aberdeen Street for contractor to complete some work. Bay Ridge Drive, Princess to Taylor Kidd, expect delays while a contractor begins phase two of the Bay Ridge Drive active transportation upgrades. Collins Bay Road, Prince Charles Edwin to Princess, expect delays while a contractor completes phase two of the Princess and Collins Bay active transportation improvements. Gardner's Road at Centennial and Creekford, expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal upgrades, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Highway 2, Abbeydon to St. Lawrence, expect a lane closure to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. The lane closure will be controlled by a temporary traffic signal. For more details on all of these projects, you can visit Get Involved Kingston. Expect delays on the following roads until July 31st from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Princess Street, Division to Clergy, John Counter Boulevard, Aberfoyle to Portsmouth, Portsmouth Avenue, Old Quarry to John Counter, and finally Front Road, King to Sandy Bay. That concludes your weather and traffic report for this morning, and now back to more local news. Yesterday, Skeleton Park Arts Festival celebrated another successful year with their annual volunteer concert. This time around, with the added excitement of returning to pre-pandemic volunteer numbers and hosting the full lineup of Toronto's Mosquito Bar. Here is a bit of what Greg Tilson's BAF director had to say about this year's concert leading up to the event in an interview with CFRC. Greg, this is a celebration for SPAF volunteers. Have you hosted a concert like this in the past, or is this sort of something new this year?
Well, we always try to thank our volunteers. They work so hard at the festival. Glad our volunteer coordinator, works with over 100 volunteers. They probably won't all come to this event just because summer is so tricky to get people out, people are away and that kind of thing. But it is open to the general public. Pay what you can. It's free for volunteers. It's just an opportunity to thank the neighborhood people for all the work they do to make that annual festival at Skeleton Park happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And when did Mosquito Bar kind of enter the conversation to be the main act for this?
Well, Tangi and Mosquito Bar, they've been, affiliated with the Skeleton Park Arts Festival for a long time. I think it was over a decade when Tangi was first involved with the Lemon Bucket Orchestra. They're also involved with a festival in just north of Kingston called the Ball Folk Festival, which is interesting. Tangi may talk about that. But yeah, Mosquito Bar, like around these parts, super popular. People love it. So it was just an obvious choice, and they happened to be passing through on tour.
While the Skeleton Park neighborhood is well known for its history, the beloved community-run Skeleton Press and the Skeleton Park Arts Festival that brings Kingstonians together each summer, the neighborhood is still bouncing back from the impacts of the pandemic. Events like this, including the previous fundraisers this year for the Skeleton Press, have continued to call in residents from Skeleton Park and across Kingston. Tilson spoke a bit to this and the volunteer turnout to this year's festival.
I do think that, you know, on a positive note, like, we're back to, I think, the pre-pandemic volunteer levels. You know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of festivals had trouble with that participation and engagement piece coming out of the pandemic, where it took a while for people to get back involved. And so the good news is that, you know, for a free neighborhood festival, we're back to the same kind of numbers of, and that's thanks to our volunteer coordinator, Jill Glatt. But yeah, you know, it's nice just to have that level of neighborhood engagement back to what it was before the pandemic.
As Tilson also mentioned, Mosquito Bar, currently on their Ontario Quebec tour, have been longtime friends of SPAF. This event also marks an exciting opportunity for Mosquito Bar fans, who are able to see the full band all together for the first time in Kingston. Tangi Rapars on vocals and button accordion for Mosquito Bar also joined the chat about this year's concert to speak a bit about having the full band back together and what audiences could expect leading up to the concert. How you feeling about walking into Thursday and celebrating SPAF volunteers?
We are really excited to come back to Kingston. Yeah, like I think it's been like over a year since we played in Kingston, so that's gonna be like really fun and really happy to play for all the volunteers, you know, that are like supporting and making like the Skeleton Park Festival happen.
Yeah, for sure, and I'm sure a lot of people going to the concert have already heard Mosquito Bar and are very excited to see you again. But could you tell us a bit about Mosquito Bar and what folks can expect on Thursday if they maybe haven't seen you before?
Yeah, so it's a bit complicated to describe Mosquito Bar because we are actually a big mix of different cultures. Mm-hmm. So most of the time, I like to describe it as a musical journey, where we go from Brittany, the Celtic part of France, all the way to Baghdad in Iraq, and we also go in the Balkans and even to South America. And so, yeah, it's a big musical journey around the world. And also, we consider the music like a healing music.
Mm-hmm, awesome. And what did you think when Greg reached out to you to do this concert?
Yeah, of course. Like, we are big supporters of like any like all the festivals that happen in Toronto and we like in Ontario, and we always, you know, try to support and be present for all the different communities. So it made sense for us to be playing there for the volunteers of the festival on our way to Quebec. Mm-hmm. I'm also really excited because this is like the prime band that is coming to play, because a lot of times my members are like busy because they all play in 10 different bands. Mm-hmm. And this is a lucky time where we have the prime members that are coming to Kingston, so it's going to be a really exciting show.
Just to get a bit deeper into that, Tungi, could you kind of go through who your members are and who we'll be seeing on Thursday?
Sure. On Thursday we're going to have, of course, the co-founder Ahmed Monika on vocal and percussions, who's from Iraq. Then we're going to have Petri Najem on the violin, who's from Algeria. Maj Soukat on the clarinet from Syria. Dimitrios Petzalakis from Greece on the oud. Christopher Kettlewell from Newmarket, Ontario on the bass. And who did I miss in the band? And Dijidam Baiano from Brazil on the percussion, from Brittany on the accordion and voice. Everybody is like really like talented, so they all play in so many like local bands, but also international acts, and they play and they go on tour everywhere. So it's a really busy bunch of guys, and so yeah, it's really rare for us to actually play all together during the summertime. All of us, you know, there's always at least one that is busy with something else or something like that, you know.
So this show is kind of exciting for Mosquito Bar fans as well, as SPAF volunteers.
Yeah, because like basically, like, yeah, the people of Kingston haven't seen the band like this yet.
The full roster.
It's, yeah, the full seven piece haven't played yet in that region, so it's the first time.
one of many reasons to get out to the show.
While the concert took place last night, you can still learn more and support Skelton Park Arts Festival by visiting their social media or skeltonparkartsfest.ca. Also, be sure to check out the remaining Mosquito Bar Ontario Quebec tour dates to see if you can catch one of their other shows.
For a neighborhood that is very much in transition, and you know, we partner with organizations like Keys who work with a lot of newcomers, and you know, that diversity piece is really important to us, to try to create spaces like in the park or in church or places around the neighborhood where people feel welcome, and you know, where it's accessible to many different kinds of cultures. And so the Mosquito Bar is just the perfect band for that. You know, like, there's something for everyone when you come to see the Mosquito Bar.
Kingston Economic Development has wrapped another year of their summer company program. This year, supporting the creation of 12 businesses pioneered by local youth. Starting in 2001, each summer, the three-month program provides participants with business training and financial assistance, fostering their ability to launch and manage their businesses. The program is open to students aged 15 to 29. And while most years they take 10 participants, this year they were able to support 12 students in getting their start in business. The lineup this year spanned across a variety of industries, including farming, technology, health, and fashion. I sat down with Norman Musengimana, Kingston Economic Development's Manager for Startups and Entrepreneurship, to talk about this year's program. Well, to start us off, I was wondering if you'd like to just introduce yourself and your role with Kingston Economic Development.
Yes, my name is Norman Musengimana, and I'm the Business Development Manager for Startups and Entrepreneurship at the Kingston Economic Development Corporation. And we are lucky to run a couple of programs, some of which are funded by the City of Kingston or the provincial government, or some of could be funded by the federal government.
Awesome. Yeah. And I was wondering if you could give us just a general summary of the summer company program that we'll be speaking about today.
Yeah, so the summer company program is a program that was designed probably over 20 years ago. And the idea was to explore ways or opportunities in which new generation of entrepreneurs could be created on an annual basis from a student community. And so basically, students get an opportunity over the summer to explore whether entrepreneurship is an option, a potential career option for them, and really giving them that practical experience of building a business. And so by the end of the summer, they will have gone through the entire cycle of coming up with an idea, developing the idea into a business plan, converting the business plan into a practical business that can sell products or services, and really coming up to that realization whether entrepreneurship is really a potential great career option or not.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And I was wondering if you could speak to the importance of getting these businesses off the ground and giving these young people an opportunity to, you know, try their hands at entrepreneurship.
Yeah, so for example, I can speak to the importance of this from the current context, from a Canadian economy perspective. There is a report by the Confederation of Independent Business Owners, CFIB, that shows that there is, in the next 10 years, the Canadian economy is going to experience a transition like it has never seen before. And so there is an estimate of over $2 billion worth of business assets that are likely to change hands, or business owners who are looking to for transition and retirement options. And so we are kind of anticipating also, I don't know, people who don't necessarily want to start businesses but want to explore opportunities in existing businesses that they can probably take from where they are and take them into their next growth potential. And so when you look at opportunities like these ones, first of all, on one case it's a challenge, on another case it's an opportunity. You need people also in the economy and the country who are able to take on these opportunities and take them to their kind of next journey, which is probably growing them from where they are, because they are sustainable businesses, into what they could become. And then at the same time, we're going through an artificial intelligence transition where a lot of things are kind of that we used to take a lot of time for us to do could now be done in a snapshot, like in 10-5 minutes, especially like writing. We are seeing like AI systems like Mid Journey create images. We are soon waiting for maybe video or cinematography to be also kind of affected by artificial intelligence. So all of these transitions that are happening at the same time in a short period of time calls for probably a new generation of entrepreneurs. And so when you look at a program like Summer Company, what it does is we have people who are probably like 13, 15 years old in the program, 15 years old in the program. So these are the people who are likely to lead the next generation of businesses for the next probably 70 years or more. And so this is a program that really empowers people to be ready for the future. We are all excited about and we are all looking forward to. But you also need to be able to have entrepreneurs who are able to match whatever changes are going on in the moment. So that's kind of what drives us to run these types of programs. And that's why we are always excited when the Ministry of Economic Development, Job Creation and Trade at the province gives us more opportunities or more funding opportunities to be able to fund new students to create businesses.
Absolutely. Thanks for giving that 2024 context there. I think it's really interesting that this program was started in 2001, but it's still, I guess its purpose has kind of developed over the years. You mentioned there the youngest is 15. That seems really young to be starting a business. I was wondering if you could speak to that a bit.
Yeah, so many of us, like when we are young, we used to have ideas, like things we enjoy doing and so on and so forth, talent, passions and those type of stuff. And like, for example, I grew up in a different economic context. I grew up in Rwanda, and getting an opportunity to even bring my idea to life was impossible. Now, you flip it on this side in Canada, at 15, many of the young people, let's say students, they see a lot of things because there is with the internet, we all have access to the same information. It's up to us to decide how much we can consume and how much we can put to use. So now what we are seeing is there is a lot more younger people looking to kind of bring their ideas to life in this program. And what we kind of see is these are probably some of the most driven people you'll ever see, because they are passionate about what they want to do. And as you know, in entrepreneurship, we say, yes, the passion is important, but also sometimes timing plays a key role. And so when you start very early, you get to enjoy it. You get to see the good side of being an entrepreneur, experience it in a really good way, because they have mentorship. People who have done this over and over for a long time, trying to guide them to bring these ideas to life. And so imagine if you enjoy it when you're 15, probably you're going to give it a shot at 16, 17, 18, maybe 30. And so for us, it's like planting a seed and watering it very early and really trying to tame it as it grows, and as more opportunities avail themselves in the ecosystem. So we hope to see them grow into really fantastic entrepreneurs 10 years, 20 years, 30 years down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. And would you say it's skewed a bit younger this year?
Yes. Yeah. We get excited, right? Because yeah. In many cases, like when you're starting these types of programs at the beginning of the year, you are wondering whether you'd get candidates. And then by the time the program is running, you realize that you actually have more candidates than you are expecting. And so now you have a tough choice to make. Who do you give opportunities and who do you not give opportunities? And so we make them go through a business planning process, and then a kind of pitch where they tell us, this is what I'm planning to do, this is why I want to do it. And so being selected at 15 means that they are actually doing really cool stuff and they are driven to see them come to fruition.
Yeah, and 12 new businesses opened over the summer. Is this sort of an average amount? Is this more than usual?
So this year, this is more than usual because we got an additional funding from the province, from the ministry. And so we have two additional businesses. Usually we usually work around 10. But this year we have two new ones, which is very exciting from our side, because in many cases we have more people wanting to participate in the program than we can afford. And so this new funding really played a really huge role for us.
Yeah, really awesome. What kinds of businesses entered the scene this year?
Yeah, so there is a couple of industries. I think there are some which are kind of high tech, and then there are others that are, for example, in the farming space. We have someone who's working on a chicken farm, and I think if I recall correctly, he said that he has about 200 chickens. And then we have other people who are working, for example, on new technology like videography and photography using drones. And then we have people who are working on indoor hydroponic farming for apartments. We have people who are working on, every year we have one or two people who are working on lawn mowing. So we have also someone in that space. And then we have someone who's doing like what you could call like, are you familiar with the NFT kind of art scene where people get to create these creative arts? And so we have a participant who's printing them on t-shirt, and if you scan them they lead you to the an online description of who these people are, or who the person wearing the shirt is, or what they care about, and so on and so forth, from a creative angle. And then you have someone who's working on candles. Yeah, so it's a really kind of a mix of young and talented and driven people.
Participants will be presenting their business projects at a showcase on August 15th at Fractal Workplace. For a full list of 2024 participants and their businesses, you can visit investkingston.ca/summercompany.
When you work with the people who are motivated and who have a lot of energy, visions, ideas, you really feel like you are, it doesn't feel like work. It feels like you're somewhere on a holiday having fun with a lot of people who are driven. So it's really exciting to be part of this process and this program.
Before we wrap up this morning, we're going to run through your Friday forecast, a roundup of all the best events Kingston has to offer this weekend. Starting off with tonight, if you're looking for karaoke, you actually have two options. You can head to The Buckle for country karaoke, or Daft Brewing anytime between 9 p.m. and midnight for free. On Saturday, July 27th, head down to Springer Market Square Public Market, open from 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. This will have local produce, local artisans, and more. This is fun for all ages. Bring your friends and family to Fort Henry for the return of the historic Fort Henry Tattoo on Saturday night. Featuring the precision and skill of top Canadian military bands, dancers, and fireworks. The event runs from 7 to 9 p.m. and tickets start at $21. Bring your friends to Spearhead Brewery for a night of laughter and fun with local comedian Al Babcock. From 7 to 10 p.m. on Saturday night, he'll be bringing you all the jokes for free. Studio 330 Yoga is hosting a board game night on Saturday night as well. 5 to midnight, enjoy fun board games and mingle. The event is free to attend. On Sunday, July 28th, reduce your footprint and join in on Outdoors Farmers Market at Kingston Memorial Center. Enjoy produce, pre-made food, and more from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Relax and rejuvenate this Sunday at Battery Park with free yoga. Bring your yoga mat and enjoy a session taught by a local instructor from 10 to 11 a.m. The session is free. Head down to Red House for Sunday Funday from 10 a.m. all the way to midnight for brews and tunes. The event is free. Finally, finish off your week by heading on down to The Buckle for Country Open Mic on Sunday from 7 to 10 p.m. This event is also free to attend. That is all things current in Kingston for this week. Thank you for listening to CFRC's local news programming, brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. To listen on the go and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up next, and all of our Friday afternoon programming, including Whiplash, Anything and Everything with DJ Aaron, the final episode of Summer Sessions with Paige Lang, featuring a classic rock vibe today, and Finding a Voice, Poetry and Poetic Concerns with Bruce Kaufman. Once again, be sure to stay tuned for all of this and more right here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.
Oh, is a musical instrument lending library located in the Tet Center at 370 King Street West in Kingston, Ontario. Started by the late Joe Chitlin, who wanted everyone to experience the joy of playing an instrument, Joe's Mill has over 1,000 musical instruments and resources for you to lend out so you can take up a new hobby or get back into an old one. Stop by, register for only $15, and then take out an instrument at any time for free. Joe's Mill is located at the Tet Center on the lower floor in Unit 110. Visit joesmill.org for more information.
Did you recognize that sound? That's the sound of a healthy, well-cared-for cat. I truly hope you've been lucky enough to hear that sound before. The feral cat population around Kingston and the surrounding areas has grown considerably over the last few years. And thanks to organizations like Kendra's Community Kitties, these feral cats are being fed, medically cared for, spayed, neutered, flea treated, dewormed, given winter shelters, and placed in loving homes whenever possible.
Hundreds of these special animals have been rescued by Kendra, and many of these wonderful felines are purring right now, safe and healthy.
But rescuing and rehoming feral cats isn't easy. It requires an enormous amount of time and effort, and there are a few ways you can help.
You can donate to Kendra's Community Kitties on their website, kckitties.com. Even a small amount will help pay for medication, spay and neutering procedures, and food and supplies to keep these felines sheltered and healthy in the cold winters or extreme heat of the summer. Because some of these kitties are not socialized, Kendra has committed herself to provide 22 dishes of food with fresh water every day, 365 days a year, to six feral colonies. Food prices have increased significantly, so donations of food and money are always needed. Funding assists with the process of finding homes for these cats as well, as it takes time and money to find the right individual or family to be matched with the right kind of cat. You can become a foster family for our feline friends. Go to kckitties.com and learn how you can care for and love a cat or even a family of kittens until they can be moved into their forever homes. At the colonies, Kendra plants the seeds of trust and socializes the feral felines when she brings them food at the same time each and every single day. So they're more accepting of humans when placed with foster families. But fostering a feral cat is no easy task. Kendra cannot take these cats from the colonies unless there are foster homes willing to commit to help these kitties gain trust with humans.
You can adopt one of these special cats or kittens. If you've already been thinking of getting a furry friend, reach out to Kendra at kckitties.com and she'll provide you with all the information you need to make this important decision.
Any help you can offer Kendra's community kitties will be tremendously appreciated. Not only by Kendra, but by the lucky feral felines to rescue.
And hey, maybe, just maybe, one day, you'll get to hear
Panda say I love you.
It is 12 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up next is Democracy Now! Views expressed in this syndicated program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or